Hi everyone, welcome to Girl Code.
Hello everybody, welcome back.
To the stew.
We have such an exciting episode for you this week. We have Gemma. Some of you may know her from the Psychology of Your 20s podcast, which has just been absolutely dominating the charts, if I do say so myself.
She's killing it.
She is. She's smart. She's cool.
She's so smart. She's
so nice.
So nice.
Funny.
Honestly, she's catch.
Insightful. Yeah, if anyone's listening, I don't know if she sings. We don't want to spoil it.
Oh, we don't want to spoil it. You guys will find out soon, but it was a great episode. We loved interviewing her.
I feel like it was very validating and perfect for, I think, our audience. You know, it's talking about navigating your 20s, which, you know, is kind of our whole thing. Mm-hmm. Dating, being single, being in a relationship.
Not comparing your life path to your friends or others around you.
Yes. Like, I feel like we both took so much away from this episode, and I feel like y'all will too.
Yeah. So let's get into it.
Welcome to the stew. It's great to have you in here. Thanks. We don't have guests too often, if you couldn't tell.
No, I really couldn't.
It's been chaos this morning. We've been trying to like set up all these mics and like it's actually really hard.
I know. And you're moving.
Logistically trying to get all these different things, but
our wires are literally crossed.
Yes.
So, well, we just want to jump straight into it. Obviously, we've told them about you. We want to know, we're in our 20s. You're in your 20s. Most of our listeners are in their 20s. Who would have thought?
Not me.
No. And one of the biggest things, the common theme in a lot of our submissions is people struggling with being at different stages of life. Obviously, we're 25, so it's like one friend.
I feel like it's hit us quite recently, actually.
This is like
turning 25.
Asking for our own curiosity.
No, I'm like, help us.
It's like some friends blackout drunk every night.
Yeah.
Never even had a boyfriend. Other friends, married, children. Mm-hmm. It's people moving overseas, people doing this. It's chaos right now. And I'm sure that's very relatable. Can you please help us with how to navigate the mental battle of just being everyone all over the place and comparing yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. I totally relate to this. I was saying this to my friend the other day. I was like, half of my friends are like married. Yeah, if I see one more engagement.
In Europe.
Oh my God, they're all over there right now. They're all engaged. In Europe. I'm like, how are you affording this? You are my age. Like, where'd you get that ring from? Yeah. Michael's? Like, what is your...
Pandora?
Like, I'm like, how? But it's not their fault. It's jealousy a little bit, I think, from my end. Because I'm like...
I love the self-awareness. That's good, though.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Yeah, great with envy.
Psychology.
It's giving therapy speak. But yeah, I think that it's like this thing. I have this like... it's not really my idea, but something that I say all the time, which is like your 20s are your pivot decade. So like you think that like your 20s is like this 10-year period and it's the same as like between the ages of 30 and 40 and 40 and 50. But actually it's like this insane transitionary period where everyone is at a completely different stage because of decisions that they're making, their priorities, their values, their... what they've been taught as children, all of that starts to kind of show its face in this decade because we also are like at this point where we have autonomy and agency and real like agency over our lives for the first time. So we're trying to figure everything out and people just take all these like super diverging paths. I like really like what you mentioned there about like comparison as well.
The thief of joy.
The thief of joy, right? The thief of joy. I find myself getting into this all the time, but equally is like this other paralyzing feeling of what if the path I'm taking and the choices I'm making are actually the wrong ones, in the sense that like, what if in 3 years' time, I wish that I had, you know, moved to Paris, or I wish that I had gone back and done my master's, or that I had stayed at my full-time job, or that I had dumped my boyfriend. I'm single right now, so I'm not hurting anyone's feelings. We're all good. But like, I think that that's also like this thing where you have the social comparison of like seeing these other people who are realistically in the same age bracket as you, but very different in different periods of life. But then you also have like the self comparison of like, I'm imagining all these different versions of my future self and I don't really know which one to pick. And that just feels like so overwhelming. Have you guys found that?
I'm like, so true.
As you're speaking, it's getting you're like, what? I'm like, wow, well, my God, which version do I prefer of myself? I was like,
don't think about it too much.
like spiraling in this chair.
I feel that with living, I like always wanted to like live in New York, but then I'm like, I love Sydney or like Paris. Like,
yeah.
So many versions of yourself that you want to do, but so little time.
When you think you make a choice, right? And you stick to it, and then you start thinking, have I let myself down? Is the future me going to be happy with this? And
should I have done something differently?
I definitely do that with my big life decisions.
Well, there's a full reason. Like, I don't know about, like, I get this question all the time from people, which is, like, how do I not regret my decisions? I think is like such a loaded question because I'm like, I cannot give you advice on that. There's a high chance that you might regret something, but like that's part of the learning curve. But there's this like incredibly fascinating study that I love and I talk about it all the time, which is you are more likely to regret a decision or an action that you didn't take than one that you did. So if you're someone who wants to avoid regret in your later 20s or your 30s or any point in your life, the best way to go about that is to say yes to everything and take as much action as possible rather than saying no because of that need to avoid regret. I think that's so interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you know what? You're so right. Because you make the choice.
You do it.
And then you kind of like pivot from there, pending how it goes for you, and you move on. You kind of don't really sit and ponder about it. But when you don't make the choice, you're always thinking, what if I did move to New York?
So
what
true.
If I did, you know,
Maddie,
do this? Yeah.
Suddenly I'm packing my bags.
That one was a bit deep. I didn't mean
to. I know.
Yeah.
No, but that. I think that's true. It is true. Because then if you do it, even if it doesn't work out, at least you can say, like, I did try.
I had this thought when I started this podcast. I'm sure you guys had that thought as well, where it was like, yeah, it could fail. Could, like, go really poorly. Yeah. Could be super cringe. But at least I can say, like, when I'm older, oh, yeah, I actually did try. Rather than being like, oh, what? I imagine, you know, what would have happened if I had done that? Like, would my life be different? And now I'm like, wow, I'm so glad that I did take the risk. And it's, like, paid off.
Yeah.
Like insanely well.
Yes, it has. Her podcast, I mean, you guys would have heard it in the intro, but her podcast is huge. But something, when you said about it being cringe, you just reminded me, I can't remember the quote, it's Taylor Swift.
Oh my God. T-Swift.
Do you know I have a Taylor Swift tattoo?
Wait, you're a Swiftie?
Do you actually? We were literally saying on last week's episode, like, the Swifties are just everywhere, like, all over my For You page.
Me too. When you scroll on Instagram, it's like, Taylor Swift,
Taylor
Swift.
My whole For You page. Wait, what's your tattoo?
All right.
This is, like, so off track.
But I've never spoken about this, I think, even on my show, because it is somewhat cringe, but I don't care. Embrace it.
Oh my God, no.
It's a 22.
Cute.
Guess when I got it at my 22nd birthday.
Yeah, I love that. But
it's a real litmus test for men, actually, I found.
Okay.
Because if I'm like, people, you know, guys were like, I've got this tattoo here. And they'll be like, what other tattoos do you have? And I'll be like, oh, I have a Taylor Swift tattoo. And depending on their reaction, you know whether they're getting a second date or not. Because if they're like, oh, cringe, if they're like, ugh, like, oh, laugh at you, you can be like, okay, well, that's actually not a positive thing. Like, I'm not going to make fun of you for your Harry Potter tattoo. Like,
God, I love that.
Yeah. But if they're like, oh, that's sick. Why? You can be like, oh my God, you're like open-minded. You're like, not just willing to like tear our Lord and Savior Taylor Swift down.
Yeah. Queen.
Because it's fun. Yeah. Queen, right?
Just because everyone else does it.
Getting on the bandwagon.
I think the quote, again, I'm not going to try and quote it, but she said to be successful, you have to get kind of be comfortable being cringe. And like, you're not going to reach a point unless you get comfortable with literally being cringe, like, and just accepting that. And I think that it's true, especially in this industry. I'm sure there are so many people who sit at home and they're like, I have so much to say. I'd love to do a podcast, but I don't want people from my hometown to think I'm cringe or insert whatever word. And it's like, you're never going to get to that next point until you just embrace it.
Yeah.
You know, and it might not even be cringe.
It probably will be.
Our first episodes are so cringe.
But that's okay. Like, when we listen back, our first episodes were awful.
You have to like,
you gotta get over the cringe. It's gross.
I don't even listen to them. Someone was like, you should re-record them, and I was like, Taylor's version.
Yeah,
like,
TV.
I was like, I probably should. It's like me on my phone.
Really? Yeah. I think you listened to one of your earlier episodes yesterday and it didn't sound bad at all.
Oh, that's actually so nice.
Yeah.
That's the nicest thing you can say.
Yeah. Crying.
No, it was really good.
So talking about a little bit about comparing your life to others, especially in your 20s. I think that's when we tend to do it a lot to ourselves. What would you suggest someone does if you feel as though you are comparing your life to others? And also, why do we do that to ourselves?
Yeah, I love that question. So I think when we talk about comparison, it's important to know that there are two types. So there's upward social comparison and downward social comparison. So downward social comparison is when you compare yourself to someone who you subjectively think is doing worse than you. And as a result, you get like this self-esteem boost. You're like, oh, you know, that person from my high school, like, gosh, you know, whatever. Not going to judge, but like, you know, we've all kind of done that at some point. I think it's just being like, oh my God, you were mean to me and I feel like I'm doing so much better than you. And that actually gives me a sense of pride.
Yeah.
So that's downward social comparison. But then the one that we often think about when we talk about comparison in our 20s is upward social comparison. And that's seeing someone who you think is doing better than you in some form or another. And normally what that, the feeling that that incites is like shame, I think. A sense of like stuckness, a sense of like injured pride, a sense of like pretty low self-esteem, I would say. But and evolutionary, like from an evolutionary perspective, there was a reason why we did this. Your like survival was dependent on your kind of loyalty to the in-group, but your inclusion in the group, the inclusion in the tribe. And a way to make sure that you were never kind of ostracized or outed was to monitor your behavior based on what others in the group were doing. Because if you came in and did something out of left field, if you didn't act alongside the group norm, that was it. You're out of the pack. You're alone in the wilderness. You're dead. So we use comparison as a way to monitor our behavior to the group norm and to others around us. So it's really hard to stop doing that because it has this like survival instinctual benefit. But I think when we think about upward social comparison, it's important to think about it in two ways. You can feel a lot of maybe pity and a lot of poor confidence as a result, or you can use it as like an inspiration and as something to motivate you. So I think upward social comparison isn't a bad thing when you see someone and instead of being jealous, instead of maybe being prideful or envious, you use it as inspiration, use it as motivation. You use them as something that you want to aspire to rather than something that you feel like you need to tear yourself or them down for. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely.
That was very long-winded.
No, I feel like that's great. Like, I think we kind of touched on that, like inspiration. Get inspired by the people around you that are doing, quote unquote, better than you.
For sure. I mean, it's crazy how everything just comes back to the OG days. I'm trying to think of the word.
The OG days. The tribal days.
Tribal days. There we go. I'm losing brain cells by the day. Yeah, that's so fascinating that it's kind of just like carried through as such a survival instinct. It makes sense. But I guess now the terrifying thing is that we have such easy access. I can just jump on Pinterest and type in rich, hot 25-year-old and then cry myself to sleep if I wanted to, or like go on and like, do you know what I mean? And like look at all these other people that are doing quote unquote, like what I would think is better. And if I wasn't in a good headspace, I guess you could really spiral. I think we have so much access to it now, which is terrifying.
Well, that's like the whole other element of it, isn't it? Like this sense of previously, it was just the people who were within your social circle or your group. And now it's like every single person on the planet who has a phone.
Yeah.
So there are so many different points to compare yourself on that previously you maybe couldn't.
We were talking about Europe summer before, just like our whole feed. It's just
like, oh, right.
Everyone looking amazing. And if you weren't going, you could just sit at home and be like, why am I not there? You know?
Everyone getting engaged in Europe.
Engaged.
I'm not mad about it. Like, flipping my phone. I'm like, hello, boyfriend. Look at this other person who got engaged in Europe.
Isn't Greece so pretty this time of year?
That would be such a nice place to get engaged.
Yeah. Not that I'm saying we should, but look.
Yeah.
No, for real.
So how do you think is best to manage that then?
I think in terms of our online presence as well, because I think that that is what triggers us the most, is having that like constant access to points of comparison. I think that the first thing you should do if that's something you really struggle with is go on your phone and unfollow every single person who makes you feel like you feel like, who makes you feel bad about yourself. Like every single person, you know, when you scroll through their photos, you spend more than like a minute on their picture, looking at their body, looking at their jewelry, looking at like their boyfriend or where they are or their success, that is just such a self-sabotaging behavior that you are responsible for, right? This person isn't going to not post these things because it might upset you. You're the one who kind of has to step up to the plate and be like, if this is making me feel bad about myself, I have the agency to kind of withdraw from that and to kind of remove my access to that content for a little while. I think some people think that it's like avoidance, and you can call it whatever you want. But sometimes I do think that if it is something causing you like genuine distress and like poor self-esteem and interrupting like your ability to function, it's probably worthwhile doing.
I feel like it's the same as like when you block an ex, like some people, yeah, like that's like you're just avoiding it, but it's like, no, it actually does help me to have no access to something like that.
Yeah, you don't need to see what they're up to. Their door is closed, you know.
My friend has this saying that she always says to me, it's not her saying, it's just a saying, but I always associate it with her, which is like out of sight, out of mind.
Sure.
And I'm like, yeah. Sometimes that's literally, literally like the science behind that is so right. Like your brain isn't going to think about something as much if it's not like constantly a stimulus in your face. So
we spoke about this ages ago. There's this girl we followed, and whenever she has an ex, she, or like just a fling or something that ends, she'll change their number to a gravestone. And so she doesn't know who it is, and she
can't physically text.
She can't text them, and she doesn't know like which person is texting her. So she puts them in the graveyard. And I was like, that is genius.
Iconic.
Like, so good.
Wait, I need to do that.
Yeah, just have a little gravestone, delete all their
then
messages.
Then you don't even know which one you could text if you're going to like do a little desperate text. I don't know.
Yeah. Unless you just text them all.
Text them all.
Hey,
what's up?
Yeah.
See which one replies.
Oh my god.
Oh
yeah.
My god, see.
And it's like, and just be like, meet me here, and it's like a lucky dip.
They're all there.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a good like truth or dare game.
Text all your exes.
See which.
Oh my god.
Replies.
Do you want to play?
No.
Caitlin's keen.
No. I don't think any of them would reply. I'd be like,
fuck off, Caitlin.
I'm literally calling the police.
Oh my god, you think so?
No, they'd probably be like, miss you. That's my Leo coming out. I'm like, yeah, they
would jump at the chance.
Okay, so let's say we want to cross all the bases off here. Single girl, you're feeling lonely. How can you be or feel content being by yourself, quote unquote? I mean, just like not having a partner at this stage of life when, let's say, all your friends are getting engaged and you're like, why am I not?
I sometimes struggle with that because all of my close friends are in very serious, like long-term relationships. I think it comes down to that social comparison thing we were talking about, where it feels like this expectation is set by your peers that if you don't live up to, you're going to be kind of like rejected. And I think that that is like a really natural feeling to have. But there's also a lot of like science and psychology and evidence that shows that your single years are also incredibly valuable, not just like from a personal sense of like, oh, it's valuable because I get to know myself and because I have more free time, but also just like in the sense of it's very good for your health, actually. There's like been all of these studies that show that like, it's so random, but like the people who are single for longer periods of time actually have better physical health.
It's over.
Yeah, which I like read the other day, and I feel like it was a bit of like a confirmation bias for me where I was like, it's fine.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect.
But then also I just think back to those like initial points, like being single is like no one can make you feel bad about something if you're comfortable with it. And I think being single is one of those things where society is going to try like a million different ways to make you feel like something is wrong with you. And that is not the case. And you should feel empowered to actually do the things that you want to do and to really cherish this alone time. I always say this, but like there is going to come a time when you are going to be married or with a partner or in a relationship. You might have kids. You might be making like the same tuna casserole every single night, waking up next to the same person. Right? And like it's going to be hard. Like any long-term relationship is going to be hard. And in those moments, you're going to be like, I wish that I just had one more day where I was only responsible for myself. I wish that I had one more day where I really had like taken advantage of what it meant to be a single person in their 20s. And so when I feel like bad about it, I just think back to that of like, this is the time that will one day be my fantasy. So like really cherish it. I've also have started dating someone recently. So like, which is like,
I'm at fresh gossip.
It is fresh gossip. I actually haven't spoken about it yet on my show, but
exclusives.
Yeah, it's really nice actually. And I think that the fact that I spent so much time being single and being really intentional about like who I was dating, obviously that came from like a few bad eggs that taught me what I deserved. I like came into this relationship, I guess, the situation being like, I am so prepared and I know what I want. And if it isn't what I want, I'm not going to be offended. I'm not going to be upset. I'm just going to move on. And it's like this sense of like peace where you're like, wow, I've done the work and I feel content alone. So, and that content, that feeling of contentment being alone translates into a feeling of contentment in a relationship because I know it's only going to elevate me. So like, I don't know, that's a long answer way of kind of putting it.
Love a long answer. So good. But yeah, we always vouch for the same as what you said, just enjoying being single, exactly what you're saying. You never know when your person's going to come along. And even just like experiencing living alone or living with housemates, like we tell anyone who writes in, they're like, should I move in with my boyfriend? I'm like 18. We're like, just live by yourself first. No. Because one day you're going to be living with this man forever, you know, potentially. Yeah. And you're going to be like, you know, needing some alone time. So yeah. I think
enjoy it while it lasts.
Yeah, just enjoy every stage for what it is, you know. And yeah, I agree, like, sometimes society does make you feel bad for, I mean, everything.
Everything.
Anything you really want to feel bad for, they'll make you feel bad for it. And especially women being single, I feel like it's portrayed in movies as, like, a bad thing. Like, oh, no, she's still single. But it's, like, flip that. Like, oh, my God, she's single. Like, fuck yeah. You know?
Right.
There's so many ways of looking at it. We shouldn't just be, like.
And there's no wonder we feel guilty about it. Like, when we talk about the media, we actually get like a lot of, we learn a lot from like television and movies. Like those are like the places where our like societal norms are like most deeply enforced and where we're taught like the blueprint for what our life should look like. And especially the movies we watch in like our formative years. Mm. I'm talking like Bridget Jones's Diary.
I was thinking about Bridget Jones.
10 Things I Hate About You. The Proposal. It's a pretty good movie.
Love all those movies.
Yeah, but they're really good, right? Yeah. But then like when you like dig into like the underlying narrative, it's like woman unhappy, alone, needs to be tamed by man, achieves happiness, marriage, babies, long-term relationship. And there's really not much that kind of flips that narrative. And it's like, this is what your life could look like if maybe you don't find your person because you don't need to find your person. Like, I don't think I could name a single movie that focuses on that in the long term.
Should we pitch it to a network?
Yeah. Maybe like How to Be Single.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
How to Be Single. Finding someone? I can't remember.
Well, she ends up like hiking this beautiful place alone.
Yeah. How to Be Single. But that's like also quite recent, isn't it?
Yeah. April Love. How does that end?
She gets married. Yeah.
I think like when we were growing up, there wasn't anything in the media at all. It was all just get married.
Yeah. At least in mainstream media.
We don't know all the TV show.
No, yeah.
But
yeah,
I
no.
think that's so true. Like the main ones, especially when we were growing up, was all fall in love with the boy, get married, and then you can be happy.
Mm. Yeah. And what else is there to want?
Mm.
And now we're learning there's so much more to want, like not even having kids. Yeah, literally. Like I feel like it's evolving a little bit more. I noticed the shift. Like a lot more women aren't having kids, are choosing to, you know, stay by themselves, which I think is great. And I think having this conversation hopefully will help let everyone know like they're
okay.
It's like a good thing to be single. Totally.
Also, it's like there's the massive like concerns around like fertility. This is so weird. I was talking to someone about this the other day, but I think like we've often treated like marriage and partnership as like the base for a family. And now that like fertility rates are going down and so many people are struggling to have kids or like cannot have kids, it's like, will this still be such an important thing in our society if it's not based around the creation of a family? Like, I don't know. I'm so fascinated.
Just then, like, you're so right.
Right? Isn't it?
Okay. Well, I know that they've done stats recently and it shows that the average age of getting married has been pushed back in Australia.
Yeah, everything
Everything's been pushed back. Everyone's doing it later, which is, I think, really interesting.
Okay, so now for when we are in the dating space, why do you think we date people who are not good for us? Toxic, I don't know, don't love us. What is it? Unrequited love. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, unrequited love.
All these things sometimes is like a magnet. We see the red flag or whatever it be, and we're like,
we don't leave.
Yes, like we need that. Why?
My God, that's such a huge question because there are so many reasons.
Give them to us.
Okay, well, I'm going to say like the most simple and I think most well-known reason to begin with, which is attachment. And I love that that has become a lot more popularized recently and that it's like actually part of our daily dialogue at times. But how you were taught to love by your parents, by your caregivers, is how you expect love from others. So we know there's like, there's secure, there's anxious, there's avoidant, and then there are other like variations of that, right? And I think that if you are someone who is very anxious, the only thing you're kind of after is validation from someone, because that's not something that was like, that was something that was typically very like given and taken away very frivolously as a child. So now you're like looking for that in everyone that you date because you actually don't know what it feels like to have healthy, consistent love. So when you do experience that, it's so novel and new that it's scary. So you just seek people that repeat that pattern and reinforce what you've already been taught about yourself. I think that's like the biggest, I think, reason. And then secondly, it comes down to things like insecurity. And I think our own self-concept and self-beliefs and self-esteem, really. And like when we talk about like self-concept, what that really means is, how do I actually feel about myself? It's not about your identity. It's about your attitudes towards yourself. So if your self-concept is not great, if you are like, oh, I don't know if I'm a good person. I don't really know if I'm deserving of love. I don't know if anyone will ever love me. Those thoughts trickle into your standards and trickle into your reality. Because if you don't believe that you deserve to be treated well, you're not going to demand that from other people because it is not a foundational part of how you interact with others. And I see that so often. And I saw that in myself for a long time where I was like, oh, you know, I'm not deserving of love. No one's ever really going to love me. So let's just take what we can get here because this, like, you know, I still want that, like, that buzz of like the oxytocin and the dopamine of like getting to know someone and in cuddles and like sex. And then also it's like that sense of excitement and anxiety that sometimes we get like addicted to that we confuse with actual feelings. Like this idea of the spark, I do believe in the spark, but I do also think that sometimes we can mistake the spark for anxiety and for someone triggering our anxious attachment style pretty early on in the dating game. So I think those are like my three main reasons why I think we date the wrong people. Also, sometimes we're just, you know, when we're in our early 20s, we're just a bit dumb.
Just fucking around and finding out, you know.
Yeah, you got to kiss some frogs, right? You don't really know what you want. You don't really know what you deserve. So you make some mistakes.
Anxiety, confusing it for the spark. It makes so much sense.
Right?
And we get addicted to it. And even we've spoken about how in a breakup, you get addicted to the person and it's not even necessarily them anymore. It's just like you get so addicted to having them around and it's like weaning your brain off kind of having them there. But when you look back in 5 years, you're like, I didn't even like them that much. But at the time, it felt so catastrophic because you're like addicted to them.
It's like conditioning.
Yeah.
It's this thing where it's like, there's a couple of different versions, but basically what it is, it's like stimulus, for example, person, positive feeling, they're associated. And so now when you want a positive feeling, you think of the person. When you think of the person, you get the positive feeling. And it's so hard to like detach that and like remove it. So you literally, your brain literally gets addicted to this person and it gets addicted to the anxiety because the anxiety for it is like almost like a flag being like, guess what's coming next? Like it's going to be fun. And like what's coming next is like connection and what's coming next is sex. And what's coming next is like this chase game that's like such a fun game to play. So like, I really do think that that's a massive reason why.
Let's say you are going back and forth with a guy and deep down, or girl, sorry, I shouldn't generalize anyone. Let's say you've got this like addiction, they're not good for you. Your brain kind of knows that, but you're also like, I'm obsessed. Mm. How do you suggest you could like wean off against a person?
Oh, first of all, tell your friends and your family.
Okay.
They will keep you accountable. Mm-hmm. I was dating this guy like end of 2021. And I knew he was bad for me. I knew he was bad for me before I consciously knew he was bad for me. because I would tell my friends what he was doing and they would be like, what the fuck? And they would be like, why are you dating this loser? And I'm like, oh, I don't know. Like, he's fine. He's fine. He's fine. But they were the ones who really were like, you need to hold yourself accountable here. We're going to hold you accountable for the fact that this relationship isn't right for you. And we would prefer that you don't see this person because, you know, because we love you and we know it's not going to end well. So I would say that's like the first step is like when other people in your life don't accept your partner or don't accept the person that you're with. When the people around you don't like your partner, it's kind of harder for you to keep them in your life, right? Also, that is, I think that's a hard line to kind of toe because then you don't want to be like so consumed with them and end up in a very codependent relationship. I would also say use your rational brain in this moment. You really need to like clock into this like rational part of you that is going to be like, this actually doesn't align with my values. It doesn't align with my priorities. This is not the kind of relationship I want. Pro cons list, simplest way to do that.
Love a pro con.
Yeah.
Love a list.
It's so simple, right? But it actually like forces you to be a rational human in the face of these emotions. Or be like, what is my ideal partner? Does this person even meet any of those characteristics? And if they don't, you kind of are like forced to really reconcile with a hard truth here that if you continue to stay with them, and this is for situations that don't involve abuse, because I think that's a whole different kettle of fish that like does not really apply here. But if you see this list and you're like, okay, they don't meet this, they don't meet that, they don't meet this quality, I'm the one responsible for staying with them. And do I want to do that disservice to myself? Probably not. So, and then also no contact. Sorry, last one, but.
Oh, we love a block.
We say cold block turkey. All the time. It hurts harder, but it happens faster. Quicker. Hurts harder.
Heals faster. Wow. We should write that down.
I also always think, I don't know if you agree with this, but the second you have to write a pros and cons list, you're done. So you know, the second we're like in our with notes your dream app.
Man, you shouldn't be writing a pros and cons
list. No, I feel like, but obviously it's good because we're not thinking like that. But in hindsight, whenever I've written a pros and cons list, well, I'm answering it for no yourself. Longer with them. So, you know,
yeah,
like you're kind of just trying to rationalize. You're like, but they're funny sometimes. And they do.
Yeah.
You know,
pros
so.
One, cons is like 50. Like, I'm going to stay.
Yeah.
I also think something else is when you don't tell your friends and family, being aware of the fact that you're not telling your friends.
Oh, yeah. Like if your friends think.
Like if I wasn't telling you things about Tom, it would be because I'd be like back in my anxious attachment. I wouldn't want to lose him. I wouldn't want to tell my friends because I know you'd hold me accountable. You'd be like, that's not okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I feel like being conscious of that as well, if you're actively not telling people the full truth, it's like you said, take something accountability and tell them and be like, this is what's happening. And then listen.
Social pressure. It does wonders.
It does.
But it was interesting, like when you talk about this pros and cons list, because like, sorry, I'm going on about this new guy, but like I normally would like get to like the 2-3 month mark and be like, something's off. There's a red flag somewhere in here. And there probably would have been like 7. And like, and my friend has this thing called the 3-strike rule.
Love it.
3 strikes, you're out.
3 strikes, you're out within the first like 6 months. Because like anything that's a red flag or like seriously something that they've said that's really offended you or that they've done wrong, within the first 6 months, it's only something that's going to be exacerbated in the next 6 years.
So true.
True. They always say, I mean, this is pretty much exactly what you said. I remember,
like, you said the same ages ago.
It's like whatever the first issue is usually why you end up getting a divorce. Like, even, like, my mom, she's probably going to kill me for talking about it, but it's like she has said that. She's like, the very first issue you kind of have in a relationship.
That you ignore
is usually a huge issue down the track and, you know, has led to, you know, divorce. Yeah. That is so interesting to be aware of at the start of a relationship.
Like,
oh, wait, no, have I?
Oh, no.
Wait, are there red flags?
No, but there aren't any. So I'm like looking for one.
Stop looking.
I can't.
There's none. There's none, and that's good.
Yeah, I know,
okay, wait, let's circle back. I want to know what your red flags are.
Oh, yeah. How many do you want?
Oh, you can go on.
Five?
Five's good.
I think five's good.
Well, what are your red flags, actually?
My red flags, I have so many. I actually don't really know. I think someone, if they're when I was dating, I think something that really I did not like, if they're cocky, I really don't like cockiness or like show off mm-hmm. with their money or something, instant red flag. Mm-hmm. Rude to my friends. Like you have to get along with all my friends and family. I think those are my main ones that I can think of.
I feel like they're good ones.
Cockiness, yeah. What are yours?
Mine is listening. Well, if I was telling someone, kind of like what you said about the tattoo. For me, I love like astrology. I love the podcast. Like things like I love Taylor Swift that men, I mean, might be terrified of. Girl Code the podcast. Mm-hmm. If I went to you and was telling you about that and you shut it down or made me feel little or yeah. like things that are exciting to me aren't important to you or you don't at least act like it, mm-hmm. instantly I'm like, I can't do this. Or if I talk to you, it's all about Leo. If I'm like speaking to you and you don't acknowledge what I'm saying. So like what's that? Oh my God, you'll totally know this. When they point at something, there was like that experiment. When you point at something out the window or whatever, like look at that bird. Mm. And then if they don't acknowledge the bird, there was like a high percentage that they were going to get divorced. Do you know the experiment I'm talking about?
Yeah.
What is that?
Yeah, it's called mirroring. It was like this experiment based on mirroring, which is that like if you are like close to someone and respect them or like actually feel a kinship with them, when they like try and guide your behavior, you'll feel enough respect for them to follow it. You'll like mirror there. So if I was like, oh, look up there, and you just ignored it, it's not a great sign, not gonna lie.
That's unless they're like huge for me.
Okay, yeah. Wow. So okay. That's
a
good red flag.
I just wanna feel like important and respected, which is, I mean, the bare fucking minimum. But if you're not doing that in the first time I've met you, I'm like, you're never gonna take me seriously or listen to me, you know? I wanna make sure they know what's going on. And also just like, I feel like you just know. Like sometimes I'm like, oh, you look so cocky, like you said.
Cockiness to me is just such a big one. I really don't like that.
Yeah, I like a guy with like their ego in check. Like they know.
Me too.
Yeah, humble. They don't need to bring you down to feel good and they don't need to put on a facade for any reason.
Genuine. Just genuine. We could sit here for 5 hours.
Right? Yeah,
I think you guys need to do a whole episode on this.
I think they probably have.
They're probably so different, though. It would have been a few years ago. We've been like, red flag, dirty shoes.
Yeah. Well, like, there's icks, too. We can sit here and talk about
icks.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Wait, what are yours?
What are yours?
Yeah. My red flags?
Yeah.
One of my biggest red flags is if they don't have hobbies or passions beyond work. Mm-hmm. I really, really struggle with that. I think just because it shows that you're not, like, a well-rounded person. Not asking questions. I think this is all quite similar here, right? It's like a base level of respect. I think those are my two main ones. Also, not willing to express their emotions.
Huge one. Emotional intelligence.
Huge,
yeah.
And I actually, here's the thing. There's all these others, like respecting my friends. I introduce anyone I'm dating to my housemates who I love and adore. They're like family to me. On like the third date, and if they don't like them, like I really won't give them another second of my time.
For sure.
Because my friends are such a good judge of character and know me so well. But there are certain things that really don't bother me that I'm like, yeah, I don't care if you make less money than me. You probably are. Like,
slay.
No, I'm just joking.
I just love that. Before it.
Good. Do not take that out of context. But like, money doesn't really matter to me. Like, even someone who's like a little bit dorky, a little bit quirky, maybe a bit awkward, I freaking love that. Like every man that I've dated has been like doing their honors or their PhD in some like obscure philosophical, sociological thing.
Cute little nerd and I'm boys.
Like, yeah, they're like they're like academic nerds. And I'm like, I eat that up. I'm like.
You're like hot.
But you're academic as well. I feel like you need someone who can challenge you as well. You don't want someone who's. You know, not on, I guess, that level because you'd be like, conversations could be more dull. You know, I think that's nice.
Yeah, someone asked me the other day, like, would you ever date a tradie? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. Like, I do still think that, like, I think it's just like that general curiosity.
Yeah.
And like intrigue around their life. I think that also comes down to why I really, like, just vehemently hate people who can't talk about anything but work. Hey, I don't really hate anything, but I really.
I was like, passionate.
I know. Yeah, that was.
Tell us how you feel.
I'm like, I hate it. Like, no.
Is there a bad experience there?
No, I just dislike it because I just think that it's like, it shows that, you know, you're not treating your life the way that you probably should, which is that it's more than just work. And like, and that your personality is a lot more important than that. And I think that that's something I really value, as someone who can like be really passionate about something that doesn't make them money.
Love that. I feel like that's good for everyone just in general to have a hobby. I think there's such pressure now to monetize your hobbies. I don't know if you
I mean, what are we doing here?
Oi. No. Hypocrisy. We'll see ourselves out. No, but it's true. It's like, I feel like on TikTok, there's just so much pressure. They're like, oh, you make Jizzy Joy. You know, there's this like, or you want to sell your art. It's like, you can just have hobbies that are hobbies. And I think that's really healthy and takes off the pressure of feeling like you need to just be like capitalism's bitch.
Capitalism really popped up.
Capitalism really popped up in that one.
I like truly believe that you should be really bad at your hobbies.
Okay.
I like think that you should have, if you don't have a hobby that you're bad at, you need to find one.
Okay.
Because I think it's so valuable. Challenge. It's a challenge. Like, because I also think that a lot of people are like, a lot of people that I know, like in my friendship group are like quite high achievers or perfectionists. And like when they set out to do a hobby, I think about my friend Meg, who was like, oh, I'm going to take up running. And like now she's like, about to sign up for a marathon. And I was like, mate, you did not need any more pressure in your life. But like, sometimes I feel like that's the thing where we're like, I can't enjoy something unless I'm good at it.
Yeah.
But I love, one of my favorite things to do is just make really, really terrible art.
That's good.
Therapeutic?
Like, yeah. It's so therapeutic. It's terrible. Like,
but it's fun.
Yeah, it's really fun. Yeah. I just get a bunch of colors and just like paint nudes, and like they don't look like humans.
That would feel so good. I just like, imagine myself like the art, the throwing paint at a wall, just smearing out. So
I want to do the I've been seeing people do the clay making.
Oh, I just that is so fun.
Why is it so sexual? Am I making it sexual?
No, I've seen
Is everyone thinking it's like kind of horny?
I've seen a guy do the two fingers. He like looks at the camera on TikTok. I'm like, whoa.
I know. I saw this girl and she's like, Are we all being sexualized? Why are we sexualized?
Are we all
I think that's a good idea. Like sometimes just, having good hobbies aren't, you're not amazing at.
A release even.
A release. And I think that's hot in a partner too, that they have other interests outside of work.
And being confident in that is such a turn on. I think like, hey, look at my clay.
Okay. But any man who does that like wheel throwing stuff is like an immediate like. Pass in my like an immediate like onto the next round
like they're like
when they're like boom and like I literally like I can my brain goes like zing. I'm like wow I like blush
yeah no lots on hot I mean yeah soft porn on TikTok
it literally is like softcore porn
it's
again
getting, like hot in the studio no, it is. All right, back to my single listeners.
Set the scene.
I've heard you speak about the paradox of choice. And I love this. I want to bring our attention to dating apps and how I feel when I was on a dating app, just so overwhelmed. I don't know what the hell I'm looking for. Just pictures, surface level. I don't know. Overwhelming energy. Do you feel like that? Is this, I feel like this is a common feeling. And why do we feel like that?
/ how to not feel like that when you're dating.
Six points to that. Yeah.
Oh my God, let me start with
there's like four subsections to that one.
Yeah, it was like an essay or question. I love it.
You just hit.
Yeah. And why? I think that like it's important to start with like what dating apps represent, right? Which is this overwhelming sense of choice and like infinite match potential, infinite possibilities. When we are presented with that kind of like overstimulation or like that level of choice, it actually has the opposite effect on our ability to make good decisions. This is a really important study they did at Stanford a couple years back now. I can't remember. But essentially, they went to this farmer's market. And on day one of the farmer's market, they had 7 jams for sale. And anyone could buy one of these 7 jams. And then the second day of the farmer's market, they had 24 jams. And what they found was that when people had less choice, they were more likely to make a decision compared to when they had more. And intuitively, we don't think that that would be the case. We think that like as humans, we want as many different possibilities as possible. We want like the lemon curd. We want the blackberry apple. Like we want every jam. But actually, we don't do that well with like multiple different choices because we can't really create a pro and cons list or weigh up the cost benefit for each of those different options. So we prefer a smaller amount of those things. when we go on dating apps, you don't just have 7 jams. You don't have 24 jams. You have like 10,000 jams. And obviously some of them you're going to immediately know that you're not going to click with based on like your personal preferences. But that still leaves like a really big number of people that like could potentially be your person. But dating apps, because they present this like infinite spiral and infinite like list and endless list of possibilities, actually means that we become a lot more picky. We are less discerning around what we're actually looking for. And also we actually meet these people a lot less because, you know, if they're not exactly right, if we're not exactly sure, what's the point? We could find someone better. Someone better could come along in the pile like tomorrow. And I think that really like points to why I think dating apps are in some ways quite challenging, because they teach us to kind of date in a way that is not particularly effective. We're dating in a way to either like, we're dating in a way where we don't really know what we want. And we're just hoping someone's going to come along and prove to us that this is what we do want. And it also means that there are some people out there who you might like really resonate with emotionally, but because also dating apps have that really visual component and that very like instant gratification, will they match me? Will they not? This like dopamine rush. Sometimes we say no to people that like could actually be like an amazing match because, you know, maybe they don't like fit our visual criteria. Maybe they're not like attractive enough for us. Maybe they're not 6'7". Like, when in reality, if you met that person in real life, you might actually really get along with them, but you would never know because of like the digital element.
Oh my God, you're so right.
So what should we do?
Yeah, what are we doing? What are the single girlies doing?
What are the single girlies doing? I would say like be less picky. And normally like people are like, I'm not going to settle. I'm not asking you to settle. Like, but actually be really real with yourself around like, what am I actually looking for in a partner versus what is just an accessory? What is just like a bonus? And I would say like date with an abundance mindset, in that like if you're someone for whatever reason you're looking to date, whether that's to find someone, whether that's just to have fun, whether that's to meet new people, really like kind of commit to it for a little bit. Like maybe like commit to it for like a month and just be like, I'm going to go on as many dates as possible. And I'm going to challenge myself to like go on dates with people that, you know, initially I might not think that I'll be into, but I never know. And I think that you really end up surprising yourself. Like the people that I met, like the last person I was dating on a dating app, and I like fully ghosted him because I was like, I don't know about this. This isn't like, why would I date this guy when I can date, you know, Pablo from like freaking
Pablo.
Spain, like 6'9" and jacked.
He sounds sexy.
Maddie's like, she wants Pablo's number.
Pablo.
Yeah.
Slide
But then I like met him and I was like, wow, like you might not be the guy that I like picked out of the pile, but that's because like I actually didn't know you, and also I didn't know how to weigh up the decisions. Also, I'm going to say the most annoying advice that any single person ever gets. I'm so sorry. Do you guys know what it's going to be? Oh my God, delete your dating apps. Like
scandalous,
like try and like
get rid of the dating apps.
If it's not working for you, there's no point making yourself feel bad by still being on them.
If it's not your vibe.
Okay, if it's not your vibe.
If a girlie's deleted the dating apps, what would you suggest for them to meet people?
Oh my God. I have so many suggestions. I love meeting people organically.
Yeah.
And it happens all the time. Okay. Rock climbing gyms. If you want to meet a nice, attractive, well built, probably respectful man.
Well built.
Rock climbing gyms.
Blockhouse. Wow. I'm telling you.
Genius.
Yeah.
Look lost in a, what's it called? Blockhouse.
Look lost in a rock climbing gym.
Confused at Kathmandu.
Yeah.
Looking for climbing gear.
Hi.
I need some help with this purchase.
Oh my God, stop.
Okay. That's like a big one. Also, I would say like, this is really weird, but like ask your friends if they have anyone.
Because your friends would have kind of already vetted them, you know what I mean? Like they're not going to be hanging out with someone who's a psycho, probably.
Yeah, even like a friend of a friend, you know someone who works with someone who's got, asked them, who's in the office.
They've kind of done the hard work for you.
I did that with one of my best friends. Her and her boyfriend, she was like, do you know anyone? And I was like, I actually have the perfect guy for you. And I set them up and they're still together.
Oh my God, that's great advice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ask, extend the network.
Extend the network.
Extend the network.
Look lost at a rock gym.
Or also say yes to everything.
Yeah.
Anytime someone's like, oh, me and some friends are going to this concert. Yes. Me and some friends are doing. Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Say yes to everything. And also not just for the potential of like, you know, sex or romance, but also you'll just be like a more interesting person, I think, which is like overall such a benefit.
Yeah. Life experiences.
Yeah. Fun. Life experiences. I think it's really valuable.
I also feel like you can stalk. Oh my God. Well, not sounding great. Stalk people in like a safe way on other platforms. Like you could go on like LinkedIn. Like let's just say.
Oh, I love LinkedIn. I did this. Do you remember when I did this?
I wasn't sure if you were gonna say it.
I was stalking someone. Who was I stalking? I can't even remember.
I'm not going to say who it was.
I was stalking someone, but I didn't realize that they could see that I had looked on their profile on LinkedIn.
She had no idea and she was checking it.
Like, and then I was looking actively. At his dad because his dad like owned a business. Then I was on his dad's it was really bad.
I still remember her face when she was telling me and I went, oh my God, did you put private mode on? She goes, what? What's private mode? It's like, die, deactivate your account right now.
Not good.
But like you can, let's say you want someone who's working in the city for whatever reason that suits your lifestyle. You want a banker. Go on to the big four banks.
And on private mode, ladies.
On private mode.
Or men.
If you want like someone who is into surfing, go onto like a board rider's Instagram page and go through, find them and then figure out how you can organically meet them or, you know, just DM them.
Yeah.
I feel like you can do a little bit of groundwork if you want to as well, if you want to speed things up, if you feel like it. Or does that just go against everything you said about the dating app thing?
No, I don't think so. I think that's been proactive.
I just feel like sometimes you have to take matters into your own hands.
I think it's been assertive.
And then, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's kind of similar to, I guess, a dating app and finding things based off you don't know them.
But I feel like if that's what you want to do, you could definitely be proactive like that.
If you want to take matters into your own hands, go
on. Have fun with it.
Have fun. Yeah. I think that's my key point. Have fun.
Just have a good old time. Say yes to everything. Say yes to everything. And like, yeah.
Don't be in any rush because you never know. You could literally meet the person of your dreams next week.
And then you're never going to have sex with anyone else ever again.
It's crazy.
I know, right? I sometimes think about that. I'm like,
have obviously like the hens and or bachelorettes. It's like one dick forever or something like same penis for life. Forever. I'm like, oh my God.
Really?
Yeah, I know. I'm like, nice. That's one quite aggressive, but two, it did really sink in. Yeah. I was like, yeah, really.
That is a statement. That is a statement.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. So
okay, well, I think that covers like all of the main questions that we had.
I wish we could keep talking, but I mean, we've been going for an hour. Maybe we'll have to do a part two one.
We could do a part two. I feel like we've got more to say.
We have so much to talk about. Well, first of all, we have to talk about Jizz Jewelry.
Part two just about Jizzy Jewelry.
Oh, yeah. Jizzy
Jewelry. Whole episode.
No, we do have to fill you in
the
on that.
The ethics of Jizzy Jewelry.
Why is Jizzy Jewelry becoming so attached to our podcast?
Because it's so random.
We had like an, oh my God, we keep getting like things attached. Remember when we had that like 2 months where everyone was incest?
Oh, incest. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
We had a lot of incest around this podcast. It was very strange.
So one person's like boyfriend was in love with their sister and it was weird. And then the next week it started something and there's like, a lot of
so many
concerning
submissions.
Incest submissions going around town.
Whoa.
Which is alarming for sure.
Anyway, I think let's wrap this video here. Thank you so much for coming on. Absolutely. And hopefully we can have part two in the future. Okay, guys, that is it for this week's episode. We hope you have enjoyed the interview with Gemma.
Honestly, I am walking away with just so much more knowledge. I feel very educated, validated about our stage in life, and excited that you all got to listen to such a really, really good episode. Yeah. I think if we don't, you know, do say so.
Not trying to toot our own horn, but.
I mean, it was Gemma's horn.
It was Gemma. Yeah, we'll toot it all we want.
Yeah, we can toot her great horn.
Yeah.
You can find Gemma's podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, The Psychology of Your 20s, Instagram. I think it's That Psychology Pod. I'll put all the links down below so you can find her. I definitely recommend listening to her pod and giving her some support and tell her that you came from Girl Code in the comments, you know.
Perfect.
Yes. All right. Have a beautiful week.
Have a beautiful week, guys, and we will see you next week. Bye. Bye.